Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by David Hunt. He is the founder and president of the Kosan Group. David, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Doctor. Appreciate the time.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. We'll get into the Kosan Group and the area of focus. But first of all, tell us about you and your journey to this point in your career.
I appreciate it. Yeah, so I'm originally from Boston, Massachusetts, and grew up in a pretty close, tight-knit family environment. Got into marketing early on in my career, looking at member acquisition for some of the larger companies like Aetna and Cigna around their Medicare marketing. And, ended up moving into a space where I went down to run a large rehab company. So physical therapy, occupational therapy in the home, which I really, for me, coming from an environment where my grandparents and relatives were pretty important elements of my life, dealing with older adults was something that I was, really enjoyed for a long time. And so getting into the rehab space for older adults was something that I found very fascinating. And so we would see these individuals, and we were across 9 states at the time, about 1,000 clinicians, and calling on providers, across all of these states, thousands of providers. And I would go out with our clinicians into the home, and 2 or 3 days a week, you'd be meeting with these individuals, and you would learn so much about these folks, right? Which is different because somebody's going to open up to a physical therapist or an occupational therapist or myself if I would join them a lot differently in their home environment, over the course of an hour. And you learn, between the pictures on the wall, between just the dialogue, you get to see kind of who these people were, what their hobbies were, where they worked, what their upbringing was, their family environment. It was just fascinating to me. So I was looking for ways to connect because we had, our way of getting access to these individuals was sending a sales force out to the physicians. And I used to call them donut dollies because really we would walk in with Dunkin' Donuts and we'd say, you got any therapy referrals for us that we could use, which wasn't all that efficient, frankly, but it was efficient.
I was just going to say, not that healthy either.
Not that healthy. No, not that healthy, but lunch goes a long way. Yeah, the easiest way behind the front desk of a physician practice is free lunch. We got the referrals and what have you, but I said, this is kind of efficient. Here we are, inefficient, sorry. We're in the home. We're seeing what's going on with, folks that do not have food in the refrigerator, or they're sleeping on a recliner because they're too afraid to walk upstairs. And that to me was just, information that could be pretty valuable to the provider in thinking about ways to help that individual age more successfully. And so I was looking for ways to do that. Initial was, let me fax you a bunch of information or send it to you. And then, the providers, and I understood, were saying, don't do that. Because then we're liable if we miss something. It's a lot of additional information. We don't know what to do with. And so I was looking for ways to make that more efficient, get away from the donut dollies and kind of incorporate ourselves into kind of the healthcare continuum in a different way. And found the chronic care management code 99490, which was 20 minutes of non-face-to-face care coordination. And the thought was, geez, this is a great way to kind of get inside the practice environment and connect it. And so I made the decision back in 2015 to start Kosan, which in Gaelic is path, and thought, this is kind of the next journey. Funny, kind of semi-funny at the time. I don't know if it was all that funny, but I went to a show called PrimeMed, where there were a lot of physicians. And after creating this SaaS software model to go after chronic care management, I stood up in front of about 500 physicians and I went through this hour-long pitch about, I think this is going to change, how we work with patients, looking to give you a lens into the home environment. And at the end of the hour-long pitch, I asked, how many people are going to do this? And I saw one hand go up in the back of the room, and it was one of those oh shit moments, you know, like, I don't know if this is a great career move, right? So stuck with it, did the same presentation in 16, same presentation in 17, started to get a little bit of adoption, did a little work with back in the rehab space and kind of kept COSON going. In 18, we looked down, we're like, geez, we have 50,000 patients in our system, you know, and a lot of providers using this. And said, this is really starting to make some sense. You know, 19, you know, we had 5 employees and we thought, you know, all right, let's make a little, you know, deeper run at this. We're starting to understand the space. They're adding additional codes. And, you know, we merged with Chronic Care Management, Inc., which was also looking at this space, kept the COSON name. Early 2020. And, you know, now today we sit at 176 employees between our full service and SaaS, doing about 50,000 episodes on a monthly basis, working with providers across the country. And, you know, prospects for growth going forward are quite solid. So, you know, really, it's been an interesting journey over the last, you know, specifically 11 years managing in this older adult environment, kind of switching sides from marketing to an older adult on behalf of, you know, some of the larger insurers and providers, to actually being on the other side where we're delivering clinical care and clinical value on behalf of providers.
You know, fascinating story. It sort of emphasizes one of the points that I keep making, which is, it, you know, it takes 10 years to be an overnight success. And, you know, you've sort of felt that for real.
Yeah.
You're in a space that is just extraordinarily important because of the changing numbers that we have, not just in this country. We've seen it in other countries, but, you know, certainly we're seeing the impact of this aging population that we're struggling to support. And I've heard others say this, I'll say it, you know, there's not a single person I know who is aging who says, I want to age in a home. They want to age in place, right? And you're trying to create an environment. Tell us a little bit about what COSON does and how it goes about that.
Yeah, so it's a good, great question. So if you think about the relationship between an older adult and a provider, it's a pretty strong relationship in most cases, right? But it exists within an exam room, for the most part, of 15, 20 minutes. And whether that's a monthly or quarterly or you know, a few times a year, you know, that experience, because providers have been so constrained, right? They go from this notion of a home delivery many years ago of a clinical service to brick and mortar to seeing, you know, 20, 25 patients a day. So it's the whole environment for providers has changed. So that ability to get very personal and understand a little bit more about that individual is kind of, and not because they don't want it. That's not the case at all. It's just because the time doesn't there. There's a lot more constraints around them, right? And so what we do is we work on behalf of the provider outside of that 15, 20 minute exam room visit, right? So we remote into their EMR, right? The electronic medical record, into the patient chart. And we become, to some extent, the eldest daughter for that older adult, right? Or at least a kind of a support mechanism. So the minute they walk out of that exam room, we're working with them because the provider asked them, we need to get you some lab work. All right, can we help you schedule that? Do you have a ride to get to that lab work? You need to go see a neurologist. Let us help you schedule that. Do you understand why you're going to see a neurologist? You were just prescribed a new medication. Do you know why you were prescribed that medication? Do you understand the dosage? Do you understand the frequency of what you should be taking it, right? And then throughout the month, there is kind of planned engagement, right, to make sure that they continue to follow up on those referrals. But there's also kind of proactive and reactive engagement, meaning that we use our care teams to reach out to say, is there, you know, you started to take that medication, how are you feeling, right? We also use voice bots that reach out and say, is there anything you want to share with your provider? And so we're trying to give, you know, the you know, events happen. Typically, somebody's not going to fall or somebody's, you know, not going to have an episode of care inside the exam room or waiting in the, you know, the waiting area. It's going to happen in their home environment where they are 99% of the time, right? And so what we're doing is we're giving a lens into that home environment and we're giving a resource to that older adult to communicate back to the provider in shorter increments. And within those shorter increments, we actually can affect some change because we can have the clinical interventions take place as close to the event as possible, and we can actually monitor any change in health status as close to the event taking place should there be something that goes south, right? And so today, older adults are very resilient, right? I'll be fine, right? I see it at my own parents. I'll be good. I don't need to go, right? They're a tough crew, right? And so they wait. I have an appointment in 3 months. I'll go, or 3 weeks. I'll go see them then. I'll talk to them about it then. And then they forget how they were feeling, or they stop taking the medication. So many different things that take place. I fell, but that's okay. I've fallen before. It's not a big deal, right? And it was just a bump. It's just a gash on the head or something. I'll put it. So there's always an excuse why not to communicate. And what we're looking to do is to say, hey, we are here to support you, regardless of what you need here. Help us communicate anything that's to the provider that will help us keep you out of the hospital, keep you from falling, keeping from you having a concern around your medications or some, you know, negative effect of those medications. And that's really what our objective is. We're a guide, we're a lens for the provider, and we're a guide for the patient.
So, I mean, clearly highly valuable in the context for an awful lot of people who don't have, you know, that resource within the family. But how do you scale this? What's the sort of capability? Because this sounds very intensive. You talked a little bit about some tech, but it feels like that's a sort of central component to making this a truly scalable answer to the burgeoning problem of, you know, the silver tsunami, as it's called by some.
Oh, yeah. No, tech is vital, right? And so whether we're using devices to track blood pressure or weight, right, or we're using voice bots to reach out and, you know, we call her Eleanor. It was funny. If you look back about a year ago, I had providers saying, I don't want the patients talking to robots, right? And today I show them what Eleanor is capturing. Like, everybody should talk to Eleanor, right? So it's no longer a robot. It's all about Eleanor. And so every older adult has a care coordinator. We're doing everything. The bulk of what we do is remote. So our care teams are working from their homes in a secure environment, right? And so because we can use their licensure across states, I have care team members in Hawaii and Texas and South Dakota, all over the place. So I have access to a very, very deep pool of clinical professionals that I can leverage, right? So medical assistants, LPNs, RNs, OTs, PTs. So from a ratio standpoint, I could put one individual with around 350 patients, right? Now, I augment those individuals with technology. So that could be tracking vitals through devices. It can be through Eleanor, the voice bot, which is a very low cost of delivery, right? It calls up and it says, Mrs. Jones, how are you doing today? Is there anything you'd like to share with our provider? Do you want your care coordinator, Susan, to give you a call? And it transcribes that information and sends it directly back to our care coordinator. And they can see, well, Mrs. Jones just said she has fluid building up in her leg. We pick up the phone, we call. So we may be a ratio of 350 to one, but that's actually extended because we use technology to pinpoint the people that we want to talk to at that point in time, right? And that's how you scale it. You have to scale it through technology. You have to scale it through pods, and you have to scale it through being preventative, right? And proactive, right? When you're just reactive, you know, if you're sitting at the front desk of a provider's office, and you're just handling all the calls coming in, it's because it's got to a point where somebody had to make the call. So it's going to become more urgent, right? And more, you know, reactive and having to do it at that point, where we're capturing things as they start to happen so we can address them in a easier way and smoother way and more efficient.
So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Today, I'm talking to David Hunt. He is the founder and president of the COSAN Group. We were just talking about the augmentation with technology and, the use of voice bots, an area of sort of passion and interest of mine. One of the things that, you know, stands out in that is that, interestingly, people are more honest with those technology interactions than they tend to be with human beings, particularly with difficult topics, even though they know that results in a human interaction, you know, so they'll be very honest. It was a surprise to me at the time, but I think it just sort of diffuses the circumstance. You've augmented, you have this wide scope of resources that you're applying. Tell us a little bit about the sort of the process and how you got here, because this didn't happen overnight. You must have sort of built this. What were the things that you learned along the way that helped you sort of build this to where it is now?
So, it starts with, it's interesting, the individuals that we work with, these older adults, they go into the exam rooms and they say, you know, they start talking to the provider about our care teams. And I've heard from providers that our staff ends up knowing more about their patient population than they do. And they don't see that as a bad thing, actually. They see it as a positive. And so what we learned early on is that, you know, you have to get somebody comfortable with just delivering the basics first. And as that loyalty and trust builds up with the care team and with the technology, they begin to open up more and more. You know, so by no means, we made some blunders early on. And you know, we learned a lot from those. And that, as we go forward, what we see is that, you know, patients have to see the value in what you're delivering. And that value comes across from everything that you're sending out to them. So the information we mail them, we talked, you know, a lot about the training that we give our caregivers, right? So right down to training on empathy, right? Because we're leveraging, you know, depending on where, how somebody grew up in their environment, they react to different situations differently, right? So some people are not comfortable talking about money. Some people are, you know, not comfortable talking about illness, right? And so we've spent a lot of time doing role plays with our care staff, talking about this environment, making sure that you understand what's the reality of this older adult. Don't be scripted, right? Go off script if you hear something, you know, change. And so those are the things that we're learning. And so the trust factor grows, right? As that trust factor grows, they start to say, I'm more comfortable with using the voice bot. I'm more comfortable with trying the blood pressure, knowing that you're going to be looking at it right away, right? I'm more comfortable relying on you to get me a ride over to my neurologist or to the cardiologist. I'm comfortable with you calling me 24 hours before my appointment to make sure I show up, right? And so that's what we've learned over time here, is that engagement really does matter, right? It you know, if you think about it, many of these older adults are isolated. You know, they do not have the support mechanism, and aging is not easy. So, I mean, I'm coming from it, 4 siblings. So my parents have 5 children. They're in Boston, you know, by all accounts, a phenomenal healthcare center of the world, right? It's an outstanding healthcare institutions, great insurance, 2 professional careers. So the finances to get additional support, children that want to get involved, you know, thankfully 3 sisters, you know, not that my brother and I don't do what we can, but I'm states away right now, right? So it's difficult to do. And so you would look at that, you say, that is perfect setting for somebody to age. And yet it is still incredibly difficult. You know, my mother's, you know, you just see what has happened, and it's just a challenge. And so now if you put them in the top 5% of people that have everything going for them in the aging process, and it's still difficult, progressively you get worse, right? And you get down to that group that has none of those elements, right? Maybe they're living in a rural area that doesn't have access to the same amount of access to healthcare, right? Their children have all moved away, right? A spouse has passed away, right? They want to age in place. So people want to live in their homes, right? They, you know, do they want to go to assisted living? Great, but it's expensive, right? But they want to be around their friends. They want to be around their family, the environment that they know, the pictures on their wall, right? That is where they're comfortable with. And so we have to, as a group, continuously think about how do we help that group age? And that's what we've learned, right? Is make sure we understand what's important to the individual, and that's going to vary by individual, and then deliver that. And from that, when they're comfortable, start to bolt on what's going to give us the clinical insights to actually have a meaningful change on their environment and help them age successfully. And that's really what we're learning, and we continue to learn, right? We have a lot of learning to do. We're seeing across a significant patient population, right? And so we get the benefit of learning. But I think virtual assisted living is going to be something that we're going to be capable of, right? I know that I have a gentleman in Louisiana who's living with a spouse with dementia, and I have some, you know, dozens and dozens and hundreds of other people in similar situation. How do I bring those together, those folks together virtually, right? I know that I have 10,000 people that we work with on a monthly basis that have COPD. How do I kind of connect those folks, right? So this virtual environment to me is something that is really going to help us. And how do we help educate the family caregivers to become kind of an extension of us and an extension of the provider? So I just think we're learning a tremendous amount. We're going to continue to learn a lot. It's really excited about where we're going with it.
So all of this, you know, has been in process and development for years to this point. I have to believe that COVID just sort of amplified it, made it harder. What was your experience through that unfolding?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say that there's a silver lining in COVID, but I'm sure our 176 team members would tell you that, you know, our growth has a lot to do with it, right? It's put staffing challenges on our providers, right? You had folks that were, their children were being homeschooled, and providers, the brick and mortar environment was not prepared to go virtual, right? And they did a great job doing it, but it just wasn't something that they were ready for. And so we've really been that virtual office for a lot of providers. And I think it's put the fast forward button on it, right? And so, you know, virtual care was coming no matter what, right? But it was probably 7-10 years of gradual development. And so we, you know, took that leap into a year, right? So that was just like a year or two of what we probably would have seen over the 7-10 years. And so for COSAN, it's been a phenomenal boom. We're not going to go back at this point. If you look at a lot of the different programs that are coming out from CMS and a lot of the other programs that are out there, they're all geared towards virtual care. If you look at a lot of the startup environment, a lot of delivery in the home. And so we just see a continued progression of this. COVID is clearly a very difficult time in all of our lives. But for COSAN and for the virtual care and the way that we're delivering, I think it's actually been excellent. And I think it's actually good for the older adults. And when you think about the amount of that folks that didn't make doctor's appointments, that wouldn't schedule them to begin with, that weren't getting the care that they needed just because, you know, they were in difficult spaces or they didn't have the support mechanism, we're now able to kind of break down the barrier of healthcare delivery, regardless of where you live. And regardless of what you have available to you, we can kind of deliver the virtual care as the equalizer, right? We really can deliver the same thing to every single older adult, regardless of where you live, regardless of your economics or your support mechanisms. There's no difference for us. Virtual care is the same for everybody.
So I'm with you when you talk about that silver lining. It feels a little bit awkward because of what it unfolded, but it really has. Virtual care, like many of these innovations, has been 2 years away for the last 10 years, and it was still 2 years away right up until that point, and we sort of accelerated it. What's left? And what are you excited about in terms of innovation in the future?
So I like, patient-reported outcomes is fascinating to me. So, you know, we know you fell. We know that we sent physical therapy in there. We know that the provider changed your medication. So now we can train our teams and our voice bots to reach out to you and say, how's Nick, the physical therapist, doing? How are your exercise coming? How's that new medication? And have the patient report back to us. So I see patient-reported outcomes as significant. More in-home delivery. We're tracking medication changes. We're doing a lot more in that environment, a lot more around telehealth on the mental health side. So I think we're just going to continue to really get patients in an environment where they have access at their fingertips for support, regardless of what they need, right? And so whether it's nutrition, social determinants, whether it's, you know, getting in touch with their provider and having a telehealth visit done or getting a ride into the provider's office or into a specialist, that's where we're really moving towards. And I'm excited about that because we can deliver a cross-functional clinical team environment support mechanism to these older adults, regardless of where they live. And that to me is a great, great future for organizations like ours and for those that are looking for that care.
Fantastic. Exciting times. You know, tremendous contribution to a burgeoning problem, accelerated by, you know, the pandemic, I think in a good way, that sort of enabled some of this, I think made it more acceptable in many instances, you know, and lots of potential. It certainly, as I listen to it, I go, well, you know, at the point that I'm looking for those kind of supporting services, that's definitely the kind of things that I want, because we're it's an inevitability of life, as we all know and approach. Although, you know, when you're younger, you say, wow, that's never going to happen. Anyway, as usual, unfortunately, we've run out of time. Just remains for me to thank you for joining me. It's been a fascinating conversation and an exciting time. David, thanks for joining me.
Doctor, thank you for the time today. Really enjoyed the discussion and look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, TheIncrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.